Okay, let's get going. Yeah, this will be fun today. But before we get to the presentations, I want to do a little bit of my discussion. I got some good items this time. So as always, does anybody have any hot questions, comments, things they've seen, questions on any material from Peter? I should mention that all of Peter's slides are up, and that includes his Tools for Play photos. I put those on Kodak Share so everybody can get to them. So there's a lot of stuff there. So if you weren't at his talk, you can sort of recreate that by going to the class website. Okay. How many people have used the website? All right. Thank goodness, you know, because I put a lot of effort into it, and it's good that hear that people use it. Great. So I've already handed out an assignment, too, for the students who are working on projects. For others who want to see that, that's on the website, too. So the at the end of the quarter, we'll have presentations, final presentations, and then the last day of class, we'll have a little bit of a party, if that's okay with everybody. Yeah, why not? Okay, so we're done with the who is disabled, and so we're on questions for contemplation. So these are sort of meaty things. And the first one is one that actually I had to deal with. I was filling out a form, you know, for human consent for this class, and a question came up, are the subjects that you're going to be using, people with disabilities, are they healthy? And so I had to think about that for a moment. I knew the answer, but, you know, what do you think? What's your thoughts on that? Are people with disabilities healthy? Wayne?
I would say it depends, but I think for the most part, yes. Because it's no different than if I'm going to play baseball, I pick up a baseball bat.
Right.
The ball, I would just hit it with my hand. But I'm still healthy, but I'm using that device for
right. Anybody else have a comment?
I think it's more of a relative question. It depends on, like, if it's possible for me to be, you know, able-bodied and have, like, five different chronic diseases that make me more ill and so forth.
Right. So you bring up a good point, actually. I mean, you know, people with disabilities, they can have a cold, right? They can recover from a cold. And maybe a person with a disability, when they got their disability, it was because of an injury. So during right after their injury, they're in the hospital and they're getting taken care of and getting stabilized and getting rehab. So during that time, maybe they're not healthy. But my feeling is that people with disabilities are healthy most of the time. Fiona, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I can. I think it depends on your definition of health and what type of aspect of health you're talking about. Is it mental health? Is it social health? Is it physical health?
Well, the question in the forum was just that: are your subjects healthy? And so I took that to be, you know, that they don't have a disease or stuff that they're being treated for. So more disease related than disability related was my thoughts on that. Okay, let's go to the next one. Is a person who successfully employs an assistive technology device still considered disabled? What if it's something that's visible, like a wheelchair? What if it's something that is implanted and you can't see, like a deep brain stimulator or a pacemaker? What if it's something that's really common, like a hearing aid or glasses?
Okay.
You think will there be one day we'll look at a person in a wheelchair and think of them as a person first rather than being disabled? That's good. Victor?
Interesting. Social Security does not define disability if you can work. In other words, I'm legally blind. Mm-hmm. And when I was on Social Security disability, I applied for it, got a job, and I was no longer disabled.
Right. It depends on, you know, what that organization is doing. You know, it will define disability differently. Victor, did you have a comment?
Don't have the glasses or contacts, then you can't do anything. Same thing with the pacemaker. If your pacemaker dies suddenly, it's bad news for
right.
you at that moment. So you are without. So basically, without the device, you wouldn't be able to function well.
Right.
So you are definitely are disabled. It just helps. When you have the device, you are
right.
becoming like an able-bodied person.
Okay, you're able to do more things and go through life as an able-bodied individual.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay. In a marathon, who crosses the finish line faster? The elite runners or the wheelchair athletes? It used to be they put the athletes in wheelchairs in the back. But now it's different. Actually, the wheelchair racers do the marathon much faster, and they're only using their arms. So, and why is that? Why are they faster? Excuse me?
The mechanical advantage provided by the wheelchair.
Well, it's a little bit better than that. It's the technology that goes into the newer designs of wheelchairs are so much more efficient and easier to use, and they've sort of figured out how to optimize it for that. So, I mean, if you go on the internet, you'll find all sorts of weird-looking wheelchairs that some of them are three wheels and some of them are four wheels, and some sort of have a separate steering. It looks more like a bicycle than a wheelchair, so interesting technology. Here's another one. On the job, who has better attendance, able-bodied worker or the coworker without a disability? There's actually been a lot of studies on this. Who says able-bodied? Who says disabled worker? Yeah, okay. It's true that, I mean, there's been a lot of studies that show that workers with a disability are actually, have better attendance than able-bodied workers. So here's my favorite. Are persons with disabilities really suffering or afflicted? Are wheelchair users really confined? And I pulled up this picture. I searched Google the images for confined, and that's what came up. So, and you know, maybe that's our first, you know, thought. When you think of confined, you think of somebody in jail. You know, they're confined to jail, which is a pretty bad term when you apply it to people in wheelchairs. So the answer is no. But you'll still see this. You'll see it in the news and in newspapers because people don't know any better. You know, they'll say people, you know, suffering from a spinal cord injury or stuff like that. But that's not really true, and that's not the way to characterize it either. Wheelchair bound. Is that the politically correct term?
No.
Yeah. It's just sometimes it goes a little bit too far, you know. I mean, you know.
It's an extension of our mobility.
It provides you the mobility. Yeah. I mean, so, I mean, without your wheelchair, you'd really be in bad shape. Yeah. And here's this other one. This would be, I think, the last one. President Roosevelt had polio, and he used a wheelchair, and it was no secret, you know, although you didn't see him in a wheelchair very often. This is one of the few pictures. He was never really described as being disabled, and so the question is, how was this disability hidden? Well, that's okay.
So much that I think back then, if you were in a wheelchair, that meant you were weak in more ways than one. And they didn't want to project that so-called weakness, especially in that era with the Depression and the war.
Right.
So, just too bad. He could have been quite a role model.
Right. Well, you know, times were different, but he must have remembered from last year when I presented this, because that's the correct way of doing it.
But he also had mental
he had braces.
When he had to give a speech.
Yeah,
he had two people on the side buried him. And, you know, he was always, like, the first one there. He was always seated, you know, never saw him walking in or stuff. He was in his car or whatever.
When he did the whistle stops, he had such a powerful upper body, he would actually pull himself up on the back rail of the car.
Yeah.
The train car. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, so nobody called him, you know, the disabled president, because there was this understanding and agreement not to do that. And, you know, just, you know, we don't call Obama, you know, the black president. You know, you just don't hear that. You don't hear the, you know, the Catholic president. It's just, you know, he's our president. And so his disability was sort of secondary. So enough on that. So Tuesday, my colleague Walter Greenleaf will give a really interesting presentation on virtual reality. And he has formed a company that's doing cutting-edge work on using virtual reality technology for people with disabilities. And he's done a lot of that in the past as well with treating phobias and things like that. So I'm sure he'll touch on all these things. So it's really going to be a good talk. He has an office right in downtown Palo Alto, and I caught him yesterday as he was coming back from Pennsylvania, where it was snowing a lot. So he should be back. Okay. But today we're going to have student team presentations, and everybody in the room has a role. I want everybody to listen to the presentations, and after the presentation we'll provide some comments and suggestions and constructive criticisms. Okay. No, it's... So, I mean, we should think of this as more like a practice for the final presentation. So, but it's still a way to give you, you know, practice in your presentation style and get some feedback so that next month you'll be able to do a fantastic job. So, I want to call up Dara and Reed first. And they're going to plug in here. No, they're going to. I have their presentation right here. Okay, this is forward.
Okay.
And this is your laser pointer. And here is the microphone, and I'm going to turn on the amplifier as well, so that. Okay, let's put it on her. Okay, I'm just going to pin it to your scarf.
Okay.
Turn on the PA as well, so.
Pardon for my voice. I'm suffering from a little cough. Hello, everyone. I'm Dara, and this is Reed. And welcome to our presentation on the Deep Brain Stimulation VEF Enhancement Project. The name of our team is the Rechargers. Next slide, please. To give a brief introduction of our team, as I mentioned before, we're the Rechargers. The team leader is Reed Miller, and the team members are Reed, myself, Carol Evans, and Eric Sableman. Next slide, please. Deep brain stimulation is used for treatment when medication is ineffective. It can be used to treat Parkinson's disease, tremor syndromes, pain syndromes, dystonia, Tourette syndrome, and other diseases. Next slide. Here we have a picture of an implanted pulse generator device, which is used to provide stimulation to both sides of the brain. It also provides advanced device programming and tools for capturing patient history. Next slide. Here we have a close-up picture of the implantable pulse generator. It is the first and only rechargeable DPS neurostimulator in the world and can last for 9 years when maintained by adequate charging. Patients need to recharge the device at home on a regular basis depending on their stimulation settings. Next slide. Now we have a short clip that we'd like you to watch.
Suffers from Parkinson's disease, and his body was racked with tremors like these.
I'd walk, stooped over. I couldn't ride a bicycle, I couldn't type. You wouldn't want to watch me eat at a restaurant.
Parkinson's originates in the subthalamic nucleus section of the brain. An area about the size of a pea, it's associated with steady muscle control. Parkinson's is normally caused by a lack of dopamine, a neurotransmitter that keeps the brain's electric circuits flowing smoothly. Without dopamine, the brain can produce abnormal electrical signals, which affects the body's central nervous system. Because his normal medication was failing to control his tremors, Stephen became a candidate for a complex medical procedure that promised to control his quakes and give him back his life. There was just one catch. He'd have to have electrodes implanted deep inside his brain.
I have a computer that constantly sends impulses into my brain to keep me functional. I'm a cyborg.
Even with the tremors growing worse, the thought of brain implants was not exactly appealing.
You know, initially, I have to say that the idea of having wires put into your brain seemed like a really bad idea. It seemed like a bad idea on steroids. I've got to emblazon it in capital letters, a bad idea, and just, you know, walk away from it.
But there he was at Stanford University Hospital, having what's known as deep brain stimulation surgery.
This has been a complete miracle. I could move, I could tap my fingers. I was really very, very happy. In fact, I had the surgeons worried because I was so happy they were afraid they had affected me with the broken wrong place and made me poor.
The surgery hasn't cured Stephen's Parkinson's, but it's helped him manage his symptoms, and his quality of life is dramatically better.
I've got a pacemaker implanted under my collarbone, which has a small computer in it. It communicates through wires that run under my scalp, goes up to a pair of plastic caps in my skull, wires that go right down through my brain into my subthalamic nucleus, and it's feeding a constant stimulus of impulses to my subthalamic nucleus to quiet those electrical storms that are caused by Parkinson's.
Next slide, please. Now we're going to talk about the project abstract. The goal of this project is to explore alternatives to the current Medtronic vest. This vest would be directly useful to DBS patients at Kaiser Permanente and help Medtronic increase user satisfaction with the recharging process. The project addresses the problems with the current vest design and will ensure that it is easy for the user to put on independently. Next slide, please. Here's a picture of the current design for the vest. On the left is the vest itself. The circular piece on the strap of the vest contains the recharging coil. The device in the middle of the picture is the recharging unit, which holds the battery for charging. It also lets the user know when the device is placed properly over the IPG and when charging is completed. The device on the right is the AC converter. The user can charge plugged into an AC outlet or disconnected using the battery to charge. Next slide, please. Now, we're going to talk about the problem statement. As mentioned earlier, the Medtronic Deep Brain Stimulator must be recharged at home by the patient on a regular basis. The frequency could be from 3 to 5 times a week with varying durations of charging time. This is done by means of a vest which houses the recharging unit or coil. The recharging unit must be approximately within 1 to 2 inches of the implanted device, the IPG, and must be less than 1 inch from the surface of the patient's skin in order to make proper contact. There are several problems with rechargeable stimulation. First, DBS patients with arm tremor or dystonia have trouble positioning the recharging coil over the IPG. Second, positioning problems may be severe if the battery is discharged to the point that the stimulator is not working. Third, the existing vest that holds the charging coil in place is difficult for a person with an impaired arm and or hand function to put on. Fourth, some patients report extended time for recharging. Next slide. Ree, would you like to take?
So, basically the magnitude... Okay, so, basically the magnitude of the problem is that people with these movement disorders have a hard time putting it on their chest and having it stay there. And it's especially hard because there's this extended amount of time. 1 hour is what they say, but it seems to most patients like it takes 2 to 3 hours at least. So we the problem is that when you have it in your body and it gets discharged, for example, you don't actually charge it up fully, or if you just forget about it, or if you can't actually charge it up, then it basically discharges and you have to get it replaced, increasing a problem because the whole reason you have a rechargeable unit is that you don't have to get it replaced. So that's magnitude of the problem. So we had some interviews with Eric Stableman and Carol Evans, and we weren't actually able to meet with the patients due to the fact of constraints on the project. However, we were able to determine what the user's problems were, essentially locating the actual charger and keeping it there. And the best user input that we got from Carol Evans is that the user said that it was extremely helpful to actually put the charger, the recharging device in her sports bra because it provided an elastic content that kept it both steady and basically so it wouldn't move around. And she was able to keep it in there with no problems. So, a statement of specific needs is that we needed a device that's easier to put on and take off, a design that's better one size fit all, because with the actual current design, it's really bad because it's both, you can't really put it in the place that you want it, and the actual straps that you have to put it on aren't really effective. Another design is that we want to keep the charger firmly in place
over the charging area, so it both provides a quicker charge and a more satisfying user experience. And then that along goes with the design that's more comfortable to the user. So one of our first solutions in Brainstore is actually just forget about the entire vest and have basically essentially a sticky pocket that you can place a charger on your chest. However, we found out that the limitations that you would need to replace the sticky pads, and also the older patients who have this problem, it would cause skin irritation. Next solution was to have a belt or some sort of strap. This is actually from the St. Jude's, and it actually works pretty well for them, but the problem is that their charger and their stimulator is actually located in the spine, so it's a different placement. We were thinking about strapping it across the chest, but we wouldn't have the support and obviously proper positioning. This is another one of the designs. It's kind of like, it would be like a clamshell type design, essentially like putting headphones, but instead of putting it on your head, you put it on your shoulder. We found out that there would be, with excessive movement, it could provide a problem because if a person moved too much, it could fall off, lose position. And in order to compensate for the fact of losing position, we would have to have excessive clamp pressure, which wouldn't be good for the user. We also thought about using magnets, having a molded plastic, kind of a Roman armor type shell that would basically be custom fit to you. Also Velcro strips, obviously. Again, with the plastic pouch, elastic bands, like rubber bands, and a harness, and again, the stereo headphones. Okay, so these would be some types of harnesses and that you could put on, and this would be from the extremely bulky concepts to the more of what we're looking at, but still pretty bulky. This is kind of our design phase with our three types of prototypes. You have the clamshell, then you have two types of shoulder harnesses that would essentially be easy to put on and take off. With both of them, you would essentially have to insert your arm into one elastic type setting and then pull the band over your head to ensure a snug fit and ease of use, because it's pretty easy to get it in a hole and then pull a strap. With contrary to the other one where you would have to put it on, strap yourself in, put in the little tabs, etc. Our goals for the remainder of the quarter is actually getting the physical Medtronic vest so we can actually use the recharger and see where it is and what we need to do with it. We would also need to develop a workable prototype that we could test with the users, and then testing with the users to see how they react to the prototype and how we could improve on our design. And problems that we encountered is that we don't actually have a vest currently, so we really don't know exactly what we can do, and then we can't really deal with the users, so we can't get their personal inputs, which would be very nice, but we understand that there's difficulties in every project. The expenses, we approximately $250. We looked up the prices for some of the shoulder harnesses, and they seemed to be about $100 each, so we were thinking about with problems encountered with that, we would probably make it $250, but not terribly expensive. And we would like to have a special thanks to Dr. Sableman, Dr. Evans, and Professor Jaffe. That's our stuff.
What material do you think you could use for the over-the-head configuration?
We were actually thinking of somewhat of a neoprene type thing where it's actually would form fit to your body, and it would be elastic enough to keep a constant pressure. Although we don't actually know if that would be the best setting, but I know that there are some materials that are similar to that, which would both add padding and elasticity.
Okay.
Problems. So Medtronic, yeah, please.
We applied for a grant from Medtronic and they agreed, but they said, you know, how many subjects are you going to have? And if you're going to have subjects, you know, what's the protocol? Who are you going to have? And what are you going to do? And how long? And so it's going to go on and on and on. So we made an agreement that the students would not directly contact the subjects. We'll do that through Dr. Sableman and Carol Evans. So they'll be the people between the students. And so this is sort of an unusual situation, but sort of necessary to do these things, unfortunately.
And so they won't let them, like,
No, they saw
we saw the vest, but we can't actually have a vest because of there's IP infringement going on against.
Actually,
yeah.
you might have one next week.
Oh yes.
You can explain the paperwork.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Lots of paperwork involved.
I'm
yeah. Yes. I mean, it's very helpful to be close to the body as possible. With the regular ones that don't have to recharge, I think they implant it 5 to 9 or 5 centimeters or something like that. And with the other one, it's 1 centimeter away from the skin. And obviously, they prefer you to have skin to recharger to skin contact. But I don't think it's. I mean, beneficially, yes, on skin contact. That is a possibility, and we were actually thinking about a vest. The only problem with the vest is that it needs to stay on the skin for a long time. I mean, the users were actually said that they kept it in place at the right setting for an hour. They actually held it there, but it still didn't charge. So what the users actually need is something that they can actually go through their daily lives with without worrying about whether or not it's out of position. Because if it goes out of position by, I think, a centimeter or anything less than that, or even, like, it turns, then it goes from, like, 100% on the dot to 50% efficient. Yeah, we actually talked to them about the whole improving it, and in order to get improvement of the actual device itself, you'd have to go through an FDA process, and many problems ensue. So they said that they just want a simple, better vest system rather than going through the whole steps of FDA improvement. Yes.
So, I mean, like, it seems like your various designs, like, you know, like using an elastic band and the, like, a clamshell method, they each address each person's individually. So, have you, I mean, I'm sure you've come up with many ideas, but what about, like, you know, combining, like, you know, elastic band straps that'll keep it in position, supplemented by a clamshell thing that will hold it there, so such that, because you said that, like, the clamshell thing by itself, wanted to keep it at that position, it's like if it requires a lot of pressure,
mm-hmm.
What
we were actually thinking of is that with the shoulder harness type design, the entire thing would be an elastic, and you would have it either a Velcro strap or some sort of Velcro strap to basically implant it into the actual position that it needs to be all the time, because the actual recharger inside of you, or the battery inside of you, isn't going to move around. So you would have it essentially not made, but customized to your fit when you actually got the vest. And then you would essentially just strap yourself in with an elastic band or something to actually both hold down the recharger and to keep it in position, which would be tailored to you. I would imagine most of them are fairly able-bodied, like you saw with the person with Parkinson's. I mean, he's a normal person. It's just that he has those tremors. And another issue we ran into is that when the battery gets discharged enough, is that the people with tremors, the tremors act up. So we want it extremely easy of a simple, get it in this hole and grab this band and just sling it over your neck. I mean, we wanted to have it as easy as possible because of the shakings. Yes, but there's been reports by Carol that it's actually not that accurate. So, for example, she was saying that like they have actually two devices. They have one device which is attached to the recharger that shows what percent, like, it's kind of like signal bars on your phone. What signal you're sending it at, so on the screen, and it also shows how much battery you have. But she says frequently it says it will only go to 80%, and you'll leave it on for an hour, and it will stay at like 82%. But they have another device that actually you put over the charger itself, and that will report 100%. So it's not at all that efficient, but apparently it's the best you can do. It depends on how many stimulants that a person needs. I mean, a person would really go for 2 days without, and then recharge. But she says that frequently it has to be less than 2 days, or you can actually, people with less of one can go more like 3 or 4 days. But, I mean, you want to recharge as much as possible. Well, I mean, the thing is, you have a basically recharger that needs to stay on your skin, and you move around when you sleep, so they would have to wear a vest at nighttime. And it wouldn't, and if it gets too charged, it can actually wear out the battery. So there's some issues. I don't think so. I mean, both of these can be, the actual charger can be taken out of here, but this is, you can remove the charger from the wall, so it seems as though, and I think there's a little holder somewhere on the vest that you can actually put the external battery in.
Do you know if they've done any sort of control studies where they have been able to,
if this is positioned correctly, they'll still charge it inside? I mean, Medtronic says that it will charge fully in an hour. However, no one has actually experienced that. So, not actual controls. I mean, it's like, I would assume it's like batteries. It's like, the first time you get it, it charges, it stays on for like 4 hours. Then, like, 2 weeks later, it stays on for 3 hours. And, like, 2 months later, it stays on for 2 hours. So, probably just degradation with the battery. We actually, we haven't gotten the shoulder strap vest because we would have to tailor make it. But I mean, essentially, we put a headphones system over our shoulder and try to position it. And I mean, it worked out sort of well, but it was just overall inefficient and it would fall. Someone else had a question? Yes. Pocket?
I mean, if something's form-fitting, hopefully...
Mm-hmm. Yes. That was kind of our idea for the shoulder strap harness, where it would be a form-fitting thing, but it would just, instead of putting on an entire t-shirt where you have to get your hands through the holes, and then your head through the third hole, and putting it on and fitting it right, you would just have a shoulder harness that you would just put on. But it would be made out of the same material and hypothetically this a similar size.
There's also other materials like spandex.
Spandex, yeah.
That maybe isn't quite as thick.
We were thinking about spandex. We just wanted to make sure it had enough padding for comfort. Yes.
And I just cut everything out but the shoulder.
Essentially,
that's
kind
of what you're thinking.
Essentially, that's what it would be.
So in terms of, like, the universal, like, I mean, I guess it also depends on body type, right, in terms of...
Small, medium, and large. Yeah.
Or, like, someone who's really small, right? They're not, like, that, I guess, what you kind of charge them on, you can
Yeah, that's true. We were thinking about it. We kind of do want a one-size-fits-all, but it would be able to customize for everyone. So we're thinking about either a small, medium, and large size, or having a medium size and using Velcro straps to actually get it down. But we haven't gotten that far yet. Yeah. The problem with all the adjusting in every which way is that even though you can adjust in every which way, it doesn't actually stay every which way. And since you have all these straps, is that it becomes increasingly more difficult. And they have these buckles that you actually have to buckle in here and then buckle in here. And you have to loop this big buckle or big strap through another strap. It just becomes a hassle.
I want to thank everybody for their comments. I have a few comments on the mechanics of your presentation. I thought it was very good. Some people do a more direct, abstract statement of what you're going to be talking about right up front. I think that really prepares audience for what you're going to do. In your case, it was a few slides until you got to that.
Yeah.
So you might think about just rearranging the order a little bit so that,
okay,
like, the first thing you say prepares people's minds for what they're going to hear.
Okay.
And other people have used, like, an outline for an agenda so they know what to expect. So that'll be next time.
Yes, that's a good idea.
A couple of your slides, the text was hard to read. It was too small. You didn't really explain who Carol Evans was.
Oh, sorry.
And the last thing, the slide animation got a little annoying. So that's the only thing. But I thought it was a good presentation. I really liked the video, and I think you explained things well. Well, I sort of knew it already, so I'm the best person. So let's give the team another hand. Who is Carol Evans?
Yeah, who is Carol Evans? She's a neurologist at Kaiser and Hayward.
Oh, okay. Is she
a... No, she's a neurologist.
express function of F7.
Try closing the application and starting it again.
Try closing PowerPoint? Oh, I think so. It's just not productive at all.
I'm going to use my thumb drive.
Yeah, I have.
It's still the same. No.
already open.
Oh, there it is. Okay, hold on. Let me turn to your end.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay.
Forward.
Okay. I don't think I need a laser point. Oh, I should put her clip this, I guess. But did we have a laser pointer? I think there was. Oh, okay. Oh, I got it. Thanks. Sorry for the technical trouble. I was lucky to end up with an aptly titled project called Dr. Kane's Cane. It's not advancing. Oh, okay. So a little bit about myself. I'm Harpreet, and I'm a junior in the mechanical engineering program. So I started Stanford thinking that I wanted to be a neurologist, and I was all set for medical school. But then early on, I realized the power of engineering, and quickly changed my major to mechanical engineering, and I haven't looked back since then. And I actually, this class has been phenomenal in terms of providing me perspective on assistive technology, and I'm really grateful for that, because I don't think I would have gotten what I've gotten out of this class in my traditional undergraduate engineering program. For example, I was in the dining hall the other day, and I saw someone, I think they had their lower leg broken, and they were using, you know, assistive technology to get around, and I stood there for a couple minutes trying to figure out how it was working. So I don't think, like, you know, I wouldn't have paused there for 2 minutes had I not had that class. So in that sense, I guess it's made me look at the world a little differently, and I've had some very stimulating conversations with Dave outside of class, and all of them have helped me kind of continue, or I guess challenge on a daily basis, like what it means to be disabled and so forth. So, okay. So a little bit about Dr. Thomas Kane, Dr. Thomas Kane is a professor emeritus at Stanford, and actually this wasn't the first time that I'd heard of Professor Thomas Kane, so I've taken statics and dynamic courses from one of his students, Paul Mittagy, if you know him, and Paul frequently mentioned Dr. Kane, and he was actually in my dynamics textbook, and so when I heard of Dr. Kane here, and I was like, oh, well, that famous guy. So I'm actually, I was really excited to work on a project for Dr. Kane, which was the famous guy that I'd heard about in my dynamics courses. So it's really, I think, once in a lifetime opportunity to work with someone who's really well known in their field, so forth. And Dr. Kane is visually impaired, he lives in a residential home actually not too far from campus, and he uses a traditional walker for stability and balance, and I guess that's his main means of mobility at this point in time. And he actually has an innovative idea for the redesign of canes. As I was talking about walkers, these are some images that might come up in your mind when you first think of walkers. The one on the left-hand side is actually a better version of the one on the right, and it's got handbrakes and so forth, and the one on the right is more of a simple version. And the thing about walkers is that they're just, it's not that they don't serve their function well, it's just that they're too bulky and not necessarily the most portable items that, you know, a person could have in terms of getting around. So I think the larger issue that Dr. Kane has with walkers is that they're bulky and not lightweight and not easily transportable. And the premise for this project is... The premise for this project is that if your vision, your ability to see, and the fluid pressure in your ears is really important to your balance. And so, for example, if you try the simple exercise of like closing your eyes and try walking in a straight line, you have trouble walking in a straight line with your eyes closed. And then if you try balancing on a foot and have your if you close your ears, you'll realize that you tip over really fast. So So, you know, vision and your pressure in the ears might degenerate with age, but your strength necessarily doesn't have to. So this project is in part like leveraging the strength that, you know, the elderly or the disabled might have in order to provide them something affordable and is able to serve the same function as a walker. So Dr. Kane envisions a lightweight portable set of canes that can assist him with balancing. These set of canes may also serve a dual function in the sense they may also be able to aid in sensing, which walkers necessarily can't. And if you can sense something and you have those references, those can go ways in terms of like your ability to navigate. So in other words, Dr. Kane envisions sort of like quadruped walking, where if you have two sets of canes and then you have your two feet, anytime that I'm walking, I have one point at any given time in contact with the ground. But with these canes, I would have three points in contact with the ground, and that would provide more stability. They would also allow someone to negotiate stairs, which typical walkers don't. There are some walkers that are adapted to also that can be used on stairs, but if with these canes, you should technically be able, that's one of the goals, is to be able to navigate stairs. And they don't necessarily need to be load-bearing. For example, Dr. Kane doesn't necessarily need something that takes away his weight. It's more of a balancing issue for him. There is a current prototype that's kind of in the works right now, or the one that I'll be improving. And this was created by Doug Schwant. And actually, Dr. Kane is very impressed with the first iteration of this design. And I'll quickly play a video that shows Dr. Kane using this prototype.
Well, the students can work on that part of it.
But you can imagine that part.
Right.
The essence of it is, and an important part of it is something connected to having it attached here and being able to let go. And that I would like to demonstrate by using an ordinary cane, which I'll get from your room. Can you make a break?
Sure.
Okay.
These are really fun guys. So, as you can see, Dr. Kane is able to use this set of prototypes to perform in large part the function that he ultimately desires out of these canes. But there is room for improvement on three different levels, and I'll point those out right now. And I'll use one. So Dr. Kane, and also this is, I guess I'm reducing this project a little bit down to Dr. Kane just because I've had more contact with him, but this is also applicable outside of Dr. Kane as well. One thing that Dr. Kane wants to do is make this angle right here adjustable. And the reason why is if you can imagine using these canes as you're trying to go up the stairs, you would have to lift these canes in order to climb stairs. So if you can adjust the angle on this as you're the appropriate angle that you will be able to, I guess, climb stairs without having to physically pick these up. So that's the first level of improvement, and the one that he desires the most is to have this angle be adjustable. And then the other, so right now, as you can see, that there's this part right here functions as a hand grip, but there's no permanent. There's some Velcro up here that can go around your forearm, but there's not really a sturdy component here that will actually get down to your arm. So it's also a matter of finding how this will connect to your forearm. And then the last level of improvement that he's interested in is actually making this lower segment of adjustable length so that you can individually tailor it to each customer in some sense. So, as I mentioned, the adjustable angle is primarily for use on stairs, but also possibly for personal preference, depending on the individual that's using these canes. And there's a lot of questions that go around with, trying to determine how this adjustable angle should work. For example, can there be predefined angles where, for example, it can only go 30, 60, or 90 or something, and trying to figure what those angles are? Or should it be something that's, extremely precise and you can have just, a degree change of an angle change of 1 degree? But I think the dominant issue with the angle, adjusting the angle, is that you want that joint to be extremely secure, and you want it to lock extremely well. And so I'll show you what I'm currently thinking in terms of having an adjustable angle is a ratchet system of some sorts. And this is actually from an orthotics place, but as you can see, I'll pass this around, but there's little indentations on this wheel, and you can change the angle by very small deflections. So this is ultimately something that Dr. Kane's looking for. If you can imagine, this being top part of the cane, you can move the bottom part right here, if you can visualize it, to any angle that you desire. But the problematic part so this will allow you to change the angle, but right now the mechanism that's used in order to take this apart is actually, you'll need a Phillips screwdriver, so it's not necessarily the most, on the go, you can't change the angle. So that's one part that needs to be resolved. So I'm actually thinking of... So right now it's using a dialogue, but I think that there are other ways to control this angle as opposed to having, a physical Phillips screwdriver on your presence all the time. And integration in the project, I think, will be the most challenging aspect. But it's very secure and a formidable joint. So I need to figure out a way to integrate this into the project, but I hope that I can come up with some sort of more of a knob that lets the individual user control the angle that way, as opposed to actually, having to use a Phillips screwdriver, because I don't know if that is necessarily the best way. I think that would take away from the project and add to it if, every time I had to climb a set of stairs, I needed to whip out my Phillips screwdriver. So I'll pass this around. And you can kind of look at it. So this is kind of a profile view of what I envision of the prototype that I hope to have at the end of the quarter is if the other the other problematic aspect of this is, so this is where Dr. Kane didn't suggest anything, but if I have my hands rested like this constantly, there's a chance that over time that there's the risk that you risk developing carpal tunnel. So I think that I'm not sure if this is the best angle for your your wrist and your hands. So I think that I will extend this bottom section all the way up and have a hand grip right here and a rest for your forearm right here. So this is the adjustable angle that we were talking about. So this sort of goes like this. So the hand grip is actually right here. And then right here will be a rest for your forearm. And I can use sort of like a trough mechanism. A trough, I guess. Sorry. So I can use a trough mechanism in order to provide, I guess, a comfortable resting position for my forearm. And in order to individualize it, it might be possible that you can, you know, make this trough adjustable. So it can move back and forth depending on what's the most comfortable position for you when you're holding on the hand grip. And the last feature that Dr. Kane wants to resolve is the adjustable length, as I mentioned. And I've considered a couple different ideas, but this is the last priority in terms of what I need to accomplish at the end of the quarter, so I haven't given it as much thought. But you can have, for example, he was thinking more of like a telescoping, I guess, segment, as you can, like, if you can think of like something that's commonly used on tripods for cameras. But when I tried it, just using on a video camera, it wasn't sturdy enough. For example, the locks that are used on the camera tripods, I think, aren't able to sustain the load that you're applying. And then I think, but something that is, sturdy and might work in the long run is just to use the bearing mechanism that's oftentimes used on canes. So if you can, you can adjust the length on these by squeezing down on that and locking it in the holes right there. So that's another design consideration. But in summary, I hope to integrate the lock or the angle adjusting mechanism into the project, and figuring out a better way to change that than the current way that it's working on that segment. And then the next design goal is to figure out the arm grip and a way to use the trough as a more comfortable position for your arm. So with that, I'll take any questions. With this one, actually this isn't his, but this is also a possibility, but he didn't have, I don't know what his issues might be with this potentially. Yeah, the Canadian cuff, right? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Oh.
So I was thinking about that when you think about your racket.
Okay. If you can try to find it, that would be awesome.
And I mean, there's actually even a lower tech for a ratchet. I mean, you just essentially have like a curved guide, and you actually just have a screw, and you just tighten the screw to basically the pressure plate on the thing. Like, it's essentially, it would look like what you have on your forearm holder on the side of it. Yeah, you have those big...
Oh, these?
Yeah, you have those. And uh-huh. You know how it's adjustable?
Right.
Going back and forth, instead of having adjustable back and forth, you have it adjustable on a curve. So
oh.
You actually change the angle.
like, yeah.
collapses. So that part of the design has got to be, like, very robust. And then, I'm going to say something else, but I forgot.
Okay, hopefully come back to you.
Yeah, so, and kind of continuing on the your adjustable angle thing, one issue I see possibly, and I don't know how you would get around this, but with your dial, like, mm-hmm. if this is mostly to be used by the by elderly people, then you get a lot of people that have limited hand dexterity.
So oh, right.
With the little dial, you have to get in there and, like, twist with your fingers. I mean, that's something to think about.
Right.
Like, I think you're going to have to use your fingers regardless, but like, you know.
Right, no, that's a good point. So he actually didn't mention any concerns other than the fact that, you know, this needs to, he suggested actually a Canadian cuff, but, I mean, this was built something in like 15, 20 minutes. So, you know, I don't think that like this is meant to be a permanent feature of the design. That was, I think, just what PVC was available at Ace Hardware.
I have a question about the angle.
Uh-huh. So that was actually something that came from Dr. Kane. He believes that changing the angle will help. And if you think of it, because right now I guess I have to lift it, but if I'm able to extend this forward, I can rest it on the next step. Right, but if I go like this, right? Oh, the adjustable then. Right.
The
and
ability to change the angle was just a personal thing for, you know, for him.
Okay.
And his height and whatever.
Okay. Because when he was demonstrating these to me on the stairs, he, like, mentioned the adjustable angle then. But I think in the current walkers that let you climb stairs, they use the mechanism of, like, decreasing this length and then putting that on the forward step. But...
You mentioned you have a handle that is essentially, so you have the angle, and then you have a handle here. But when you actually hold it, you would have basically, you'd be holding it like that, so there wouldn't be a need for that angle whatsoever. Essentially, you would just be creating, my question is, why would you want to have the angle so you're actually having it, your arms at a 90 degree angle?
Wait, sorry, say that again?
So you have the current design, but uh-huh. Instead you're saying where you hold it, it would be a vertical.
Right, like this would come up, right.
So why do you think that this is a better angle than having it more of a downward?
Oh, well, the reason why I suggested, you know, extending this bottom segment was because if you, depending on your usage of this, if you constantly have your... arm in this position and your wrist in this position, a professional suggested that you risk developing carpal tunnel.
But wouldn't that be easier if you just change the location of the handle and have it more like the handle on the current, the one that you have over there now?
Right.
Except not out in front, but on the side. So,
like if you have it right here?
Yeah.
And I think that's a possibility. I'm not sure of the advantages or the disadvantages of that.
A carpal tunnel comes from repetitive motions, and strictly bicyclists sustain multiple positions of the hands when you get tired in one position. Perhaps replacing that straight grip with a ring would be a little bit easier, because then you can change the position as you get tired in one or the other. It's just a problem.
Right.
So I think one of the most pervasive problems I've noticed with these things so far
Yeah. Yeah, I think that I was looking online to have like collapsible or unfoldable canes now, but. Oh, right.
But there is a foldable cane that's sturdy, like a blind cane, except it's much sturdier tubes, and you can fold it up. The trouble with that one is unless you bend it, it's so chintzy that it fails first. So my wife has one, and I replaced it with an inner tube from bicycle, which is fine.
I mean, that might even just be solved by a rubber
cut
on the bottom, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think this one has a rubber foot, but this one, yeah, this one is just a segment from something, and these don't have the rubber backing on the end. Oh. They could have little kickstands.
Just a comment I would make is that I think your presentation might benefit from a clear statement of what the problem is that you're trying to solve. Or clearer, I guess, like you talked a little bit about walkers, but then we also have this other thing that you're showing here. I don't think it's quite clear what you're trying to make better about that.
Which one? This one?
Yeah, that one.
Oh, I only use this as an example to show how the adjustable length works on this.
Sure. Okay, I guess what I'm just saying.
No.
Why would a doctor cane use that?
This?
Yes.
Well, the thing with canes, so canes are typically used if you have just an impairment in one leg. But this doesn't, I don't know.
Okay. Maybe I can help.
Yeah. Right, so sort of like, I guess the quadruped walking concepts are where he has like 3 points.
Right.
Right.
I think what I was just trying to say is I think like a slide would help illustrate this.
Right.
Again, if you can state up front, you know, condensed version of what you're talking about, so you can compare everybody's mind. Thank everybody for their excellent comments and suggestions, and I also want to thank the student teams. I have one more question for you. I have it on my list in this sort of way. Has each team member contributed equally?
Well, I was supposed to have a team member, but she, I think, overloaded herself at the beginning of the quarter. Yeah.
Well, thanks again, everybody.